We're going to have a four-week program. I'm giving this 4 weeks, I'm giving on the topic of what I call Derech Eretz Kavanah Torah, why it's necessary that we have to, the way I will say it, and we're going to build on this, why it's necessary to make space for others in order to receive God's Torah. That's really and we'll go through we'll try to give some ideas and concepts of what we've done in the past and how we in the future could build up. It starts off obviously with, I know no one wants to hear this word, but it starts off with Pesach Klinik, right? We're just discussing this. But it's worthwhile to just at least get a picture of what we went through and accomplished. And I want to point out that for many of us, even if we don't believe we accomplished stuff, right, because we're so busy with all the, let's call it the Pesach cleaning, maybe spring cleaning, the cooking, the baking, the running around, the late seders, the everything. And we maybe did not get the opportunity to recognize what we went through. Yet it's still very relevant that the nature of all Jewish cycles of the year is that when we tap into these things, they somehow creep into our bones and they inspire us in a way that down the road we could tap into it and we pull out of it an inspiration, a memory and everything. So the first step of this journey is what we call the getting rid of the chametz. But in everything Jewish, there's the physical aspect of what we do and the spiritual aspect. So if you're more of Hasidic in tune, you would be singing while you get rid of the chametz. I'm a Litvak, so that's not what I do. I sing other things, but definitely not songs of Hallel. But there is a very important concept of what we're trying to accomplish. And there's a very simple thing. We have chametz and we have matzah. Chametz is spelled Ches Mem Tzadi, and Matzah is spelled Mem Tzadi Hei. So the only two letters that are different in the word Chametz and Matzah is Chametz has a Ches that's enclosed, and Matzah has a Hei, which has a little opening on the top. And this is the difference between a world that's all about me and a world that I make space for others. The difference between the word, the letter ches, if I'm enclosed, it's about me, it's about what I need, it's about what I want to take out. And I think we are hopefully old enough to recognize that the about me way about going in the world does not really work well, even for yourself. What is the gematria on that?
Yeah.
I'm usually a very big Gematria person.
I'll let you figure it out.
Yeah, it's 135 and 138. It's 90 plus 40.
For chametz?
Well, chametz is 138 and matzah is 135.
Yeah.
I don't have anything for that, but I have all the Gematrias. I happen to be a big Gematria. But so the starting point of this journey is a journey about saying that I want to look into myself and make space for others. And God gives us this tremendous opportunity. He does it in different ways. We'll talk about when you get to Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, you recognize that also is a opening up. But this is a more of a personal journey. And the concept is that when we search the chametz, we are now going to go back and get rid of that little piece, that little barrier between us and others, us and God. And we walk into the Pesach Seder hopefully with chametz being cleared. And there's, you know, we're open for business. And we're going to be open for business. We're open to be inspired. We're open to be touched by the Pesach Seder. We're open to be, you know, moved. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, Pesach Seder a lot of time has been very frustrating because I call it the two Seder rule. There's usually one Seder where everything is angelic and everyone's like calm, you know, maybe the first 2 hours. And then there's a second Seder where everything, and sometimes it's the first Seder, it depends on the nature of things. And the many Siddurim, right, which becomes total chaos. And here I am, and this is my own personal thing. Here I am, I have a lot to share about the Pesach Seder. I have almost 40 years of studying about the Pesach Seder. And I have my kids, and I have my kids that range from a 2-year-old to a 20-year-old. I have siblings coming, right? And, you know, this is a great time to show how educated I am, right? And that's sadly what a lot of people do at the Pesach Seder, right? Show how smart they are. But that's not the mitzvah of the Pesach Seder at all. It's far from it. There's also an aspect that, like, you know, I want to be open to a lot of people. Well, my brother, thank God, wonderful person, really amazing person, right? His kids are nuts. And he'll agree to that. So, and I have 8 girls. They're like, you know, Madeline and the, you know, they're like that. They're like this. They sit there and they're looking at, put it this way, my nephew and my son, who was a follower, one day Pesach decided that it's a good idea to throw eggs all over the garage. That type of thing. And my daughters are looking at this like, who are these people? Like, you're going to learn. Trust me. Hopefully you should learn. Right? And so I'm entering this Seder and I'm like, okay, what is my best route of having a successful Seder? And I really davened for this. I prayed for this, which is going to come up quite often because prayer innately is the concept of saying that I don't got this, God. I need your help. I'm letting go. I'm making space for you and therefore I'll help. And I said, you know what, God, one thing I just don't. This, let me be chilled about the Seder. Let it happen versus me trying to make it happen. And don't make it about, you know, and try not to lose it and try not to get angry. Right? And we had 26 people and all different types of people, right? All my family, I had a sister and a brother with all the kids, my family, people. It could have, the place could have been chaos. And the difference between chaos and not chaos was, there were chaos. There was times it was absolute chaos. But the chaos played itself out, and then we had a moment of beauty. But if I was trying at the time of the chaos to say, hey, I need to say something, and also God gave me a present, and I lost my voice a little bit. So I couldn't say anyways. So I didn't have the need to, because I couldn't talk. And it ended up being a beautiful Seder. And I think that's a picture, like if I could write a book on how to do Siddurim, and I saw this in my own house from my parents, but the Seder is about getting to know your kids. The one biggest blessing in my mind about COVID was, it also could have been a curse, depending on where you are in life, is you got to know yourself. You're home alone. You're home with your wife. You're home with your kids. Whoever you're with, you got to know yourself quite well. And some of us don't want to look into that, but that's the chometz. That's the bit of chometz. And God gives us the opportunity on the Pesach night to start over. And he does this in an amazing way. He does this with the whole Seder and everything. So now, one of the things that my wife has taught me many times, and she really did teach this to me, I mean, I joke aside, because I do like to talk, is she always says the line, which is, better stay quiet and be thoughtful than open your mouth and prove it. Right? And this is a very interesting thing, because if we look at ourselves, our bodies, we have 2 eyes, we have 2 ears, we only have 1 mouth. And the rabbis ask this question, like, why? Why would you do that, God? Like, of all times. I mean, this mouth, we know where this mouth has been, is also going to teach Torah. Right? This mouth that pulled down a person to get ahead in life is also going to speak words of lofty Torah or pray to God. Right? This mouth that maybe has used not nice words, the stuff that that's going to pray for God. This mouth that presents itself as showing how smart we are, right, is going to now be humble. And that's just yes. And it's very interesting. What do we do in the Seder? we do Kaddish, we wash our hands, we do Orchatz. I'm sorry, Kaddish, we sanctify the night, we wash our hands, and then we do Karpas. Karpas is the dipping of the vegetable in the salt water. The word, sorry, go.
At your Seder, does only the leader wash his hands, or?
Anyone who wants to wash their hands. See that, we were very fluid in this time.
Okay. Just wondering. And it was part of the discussion.
And people wanted to get up and wash their hands. They could get up and wash their hands. They wanted water to be brought to them. They could bring it. But yes. So Karpas, the word Karpas is an acronym for Chaf Resh Pei Samach. Klal, Chaf is Klal. Klal means a rule. Resh is Rishon. The first Klal is Pei Samach. That your mouth, Sasam. Samach is quiet. If you want to be holy, you want to be cleansed of something, the first rule is Karpas. Keep your mouth quiet. How much of the time do we have to, most of the time that we project ourselves and talk to people about something is to show how we know better. If we stop to listen, we'd be much better off. We're sitting in the Rosenthal Center. I don't know how many people know Kenelay Rosenthal, right? But Kenelay Rosenthal worked in Aish. They lived in the Southeast. They're an Aish family. They dedicated this space, and it was not cheap. When I first moved there, Neil Lesky pointed out two people to me and said, Jerry Kernis, Ken Rosenthal, both very quiet people, but when they talk, listen, quite smart, and they are, right? The avoda of making space is stop talking so you actually hear other people. And I just want to tell you, I'm terrible at this. I happen to be, I'm ADHD, so I interrupt. I was just talking to Ken Major left. Ken Major was leaving. He used to literally stop me and say, Maishi, let me finish my statement and then talk. Right? So I'm speaking to myself as much as I know, but there's truth in this. When we start listening and hearing people, right, all of a sudden we create the most powerful asset in the world, which is knowledge. Some of you might have guessed Bitcoin, but it's not. It's knowledge. When we know and understand people, when we hear people, we see people, we think people. So the first thing that we do in a Pesach Seder is, you want to be holy, you want to be sanctified? Stay quiet. Let your kids talk. Like, let them. So many people times that they have to tell their, let them sing their gutter, let them ask the questions. I have a daughter that is creative. The questions she was asking, they were amazing. They were just like, they're phenomenal. And it'll happen. Now, if I walked into the Pesach Seder with the idea concept, and I could speak about this for the next hour, about how holy the Pesach night is, and how amazing what we're doing in the worlds out there, we're going to fix worlds that you've never even heard of. But there's truth to that. But what God is telling us, and he keeps repeating this, and we'll see this message over and over again, the way we're going to fix that is not by being some Marvel superhero. It's about being a person that makes space for others and then create greatness. And that's what happens with the Jewish people. The Jewish people are put into the house. They open up themselves to God. They have to do an act and they get redeemed and they go into the Midbar and they go 7 days later and they're in bad trouble right now. They're in at the Yam Suf, the Kriyas Yam Suf. They're at the splitting of the sea. And they're being chased by all sides. And at this moment, they have two choices, right? The choice is to continue the trust that they've built up here and walk right into an ocean, right into a yam, or complain and go home, right? Naksim comes into the yam, we split. Now, there's an interesting question here. The Talmud talks about that Chizkiyahu was a great king, and the Talmud says that he would have been the Mashiach, he would have been the Messiah, if it wasn't for the fact that he didn't sing Shira. If he would have sang Shira, if he would have sang praise to God, he would have been the Messiah. Because he didn't sing praise to God, he wasn't merited, he didn't merit to be the Messiah. Now, this is complicated. Because what is Shira? What is singing to God? First of all, the concept of God meaning Shira, I think we'll put aside for a second, but we'll get back to this. But let me ask you let's approach it this way. What is more amazing in the world? When God does miracles or when God does nature? Right? Who is more connected to God? If I see God in a leaf versus I need God to like show up here and, you know, juggle a few cars for me to connect it. Who is more connected to God?
The leaf guy.
The leaf guy. Right? So the rabbis asked this question. They said, what's wrong with Moshe Rabbeinu? Don't complain about Chizkiyahu. They didn't make Shira. Moshe Rabbeinu, why is he saying Shira? Right? Why should he say praise to God? Right? It's obvious. And the Noam HaMelech, the great Noam HaMelech says this. The Noam HaMelech says that the greater you are, the more connected you are to God, the less you are what's called nispal, the less you're like wowed by miracles. Hold a baby in your hand. That connected to God much faster. Right? Go on a hike. We're blessed with here. You walk, you know, go to the Cheyenne Zoo and see a giraffe, an elephant. I mean, it's phenomenal. And think about what it does, what the connection is. So what's the complaint against Chizkiyahu? On the contrary, why is Moshe Salasana saying Shira here? Right? Now, there is an appropriateness to recognize when something great happens to us. We do. We celebrate that. We did that Pesach. But it's a fair question, right? I mean, that's the question I want to present here, and to understand that I want to understand what it is about the Shira that's special of the, that they came to the Yamsa. I mean, these are people that saw miracles, 10 miracles. They saw, you know, they saw. I mean, let's look at like the last, you know, years of our life, and what inspires us more. When we connect to God on a much calmer way than this great big miracle thing that happened. And so there's a very interesting, I want to suggest, I should have said this earlier, but a lot of my Torah thoughts is based on a rabbi in Brooklyn, his name is Rabbi Vom Shor. He's a very big rabbi. He has a phenomenal mind, and I enjoy his stuff very much. So a lot of my stuff, if I don't say it, it's usually him. You know, he's also a very big gematria person, a phenomenal gematria. He says like this. He says a point that I think is important. There are two types of songs. There's a song, you know, a song that goes up and down. It moves you back and forth. And that's Shira that we sing. And, you know, how we are feeling at that moment and how we are being moved is how we're going to feel the song. And there's a purpose of going up and down and makes beautiful music. And there's a reason that, you know, it tugs, good music tugs at your heart both when it's soulful and when it's exciting, when it's lovely. Right? And that's true. That is a Shira of man. The natural reality is man tends to get more excited about God when good things happen, when something big happens, and tends to get a little bit more sour from God when, you know, not even if things are bad happening, if we're just living a life, right? I always tell people, blame God. There's blame for everything. It's okay to blame God, but there's blame for everything. I'll tell the story that I've said numerous times, which is that I went about a person who had a real issue, something real. Like there was a real issue, and it crept up there once in a while. This is a person that, if you ask him, he had a good life. They had a good life, but he has something that's a real. It's real. It's not like anything made up. It's, you know, whatever the issue is. And the person fetched to me about it one day, and I was so excited because I did this on purpose with this person. I said, I'll make up the name Gary. It's not Gary, just be aware, but it's easier. I said, when's the last time that this issue came up. It's like, I don't know. So I do, because I wrote it down 248 days ago. So you had 247 days of absolutely no issue. You're overwhelmed by this issue. It's okay. And it's true. And it's real. I'm not dismissing that part. But can you imagine if you would have built up 247 days of amazing days and then approach it with that? We all do this. It's all true. So at the Shira of the Yam, it's a different Shira. It's not the Shira of life. We are normal people. Normal people have emotions and we have ups and downs, and that's okay. And we can be inspired by beauty, and we can be inspired and be torn down by hard things and everything. That's okay. The novelty, the chiddush of Pesach and the Yom Suf going into the Torah is that God says, I'm giving you a parallel universe. I'm giving you a parallel reality, a parallel living reality of, which is this, which is that you have the ability to be us yasher. Yasher is the word shira, but usher you mean straight line. The music of the Torah shira is not a music of up and downs. It's a music of a straight line, a flat line. A flat line, a matzah, a very basic thing of saying is that, yes, God, I see the whole story now. I know that there's a God in my daily life, and there's a God in miracles, and it's the same God. My shira to you, God, is that I understand that what is a God? A God is someone that has the ability to be past, present, future, all at once. What do we do at the Pesach Seder? The Pesach Seder, we renew ourselves by taking a 2,000-year-old, 3,000-year-old matzah, right? Be present in our day and connect our next generation to the future. We're past, present, and future at that moment. The challah at the Pesach Seder, which we split up and we do on the coast, the rabbis say is not a challah. It's a shira. It's a song. There's even a custom that we all sing it together because it's a song. It's not the challah of when I have a good day and I praise God. Hallelujah. That's important. But it's an expression of that I understand that God is that constant line, that kav yashar, actually, that straight line of our existence, no matter what's going on. Chizkiyahu didn't need to do a shira when he won miracles. He needed to do the shira of what's called the shira shel Mashiach. We're waiting for one Mashiach, which is the ultimate song of Mashiach. Why? Because the person who understands that that line, the Torah, the straight line of song, that Moshe Rabbeinu created wasn't inspired by anything more than him saying, look, this is the picture. This is the story that was told. And for one moment there, you actually got a flash of God's constant involvement in the good, the bad, the ugly, and the beautiful. They saw that. And they're like, okay, we're about to go see the Torah. That we're about to get something way bigger. And the stakes are so much higher than this. I don't mean to belittle this, our emotions being pulled for the good of up and down. And if we, when we tap into that, that's what's called the matzah muna. That's the amuna of the matzah. We sit there eating a, for sometimes, very expensive stale piece of bread. And we do it with the ultimate belief and understanding, not disbelief, we know, because we know that our bubbies did this and every, right, that this is something that has carried us through. Right? There's a terrible, beautiful written thing by someone in the gas chambers where he ate chametz and he writes, before I'm eating this chametz, ask my matzah because I have nothing else. That belief system is what creates us and be here. So we tap into that shira. We tap into that shira, then all of a sudden we realize, wait a second. What is it that we control? And what is it that we don't control? What tears us up in life that we truly control? And what is things that maybe we could hang on to God? I would say, like, take half of our packages and throw it out there. He has much bigger shoulders. Like, what do we, most of our stress in life, most of our hindrance to success are things that we don't control. Right? We could do our best. We could create great A, B, and C, and no one will ever buy it. And we could stumble on something silly, and everyone buys it. Like the fidget guy who made millions, you know? It's the same, like buying, create a bill of fidget. Right? So, if we approach now the Pesach, the Pesach and the song of God, that he's our constant. So now we have to now ask ourselves a question. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, how do we connect him? How do we allow him more into our life? How do we make things happen more for ourselves? Let's be selfish for a minute here. We should be, because the goal of connecting to God and getting the Torah is huge. It's the biggest present we ever got, and it's the biggest thing. And the answer is, and we'll see it what we're doing now during the Sfiras Omer, what we're doing with Pesach Sheni, which is future classes, right? We're going to see that our process here is that we're going to make space for him. And we're going to make that straight line this fatter in our lives, you know, wider. And the line's not a flat line like skinny line. It gets bigger and bigger. And the more we do that, we see more success. We'll see ourselves in the reality of doing great things. Right? We're sitting in a building in the Kollel right now, a beautiful building that 4 years ago would have been a dream. Was a dream. We had no clue as to how we would do this and everything. And I remember saying this at one of the fundraising meetings. I said, even us Kollel rabbis have to believe in God when we're doing fundraising, right? We just have to believe it. And the miracles of this building are clear. I mean, it was during COVID also, mind you. And the obstacles were crazy. There were a lot of not very geschmacka things there. But it happens. And we could sit here and say, well, no, I did it, or Schwab did it and everything. But I don't think we're big enough liars to say that. Honestly, it was absolutely because we allowed the thing to happen. And it's something I speak to the Kollel rabbis all the time about. It's much, much, much more natural for us to try to make things happen versus allowing things to happen. And that's what the avoda, the opportunity we have. We have a fresh start from Pesach to say, wait a second. God has literally told me that I took you out of Mitzrayim to be a nation. And like, I have a goal here. You know what the goal is? My goal is that you're going to bring the world to Mashiach. Where is the mitzvah of believing that the Mashiach is going to come found? Does anyone know? It's a very interesting place. The smack was one of the people that wrote one of the 613 mitzvahs. He puts the mitzvah of Mashiach in the words, Anochi Hashem Lekecha, Asher Tzitzli Eschem Me'et Mitzrayim. I am God, I am Hashem, your God, who took you out of Mitzrayim. That's where the belief of Mashiach comes. Because it's exactly at the point of the Shira, the thing that Hashem says to you. What Hashem appears to Moshe and says, Ekya Asher Ekya. What I am, I am. I am here. I'm constantly here. I have a plan. And we believe in that. What's he waiting for? He's waiting for us to allow him to carry out his plan. And that's Tikkun Olam, by the way. That's the real Tikkun Olam. The real Tikkun Olam is allowing God into this world again. Presenting him and everything, then allowing him as a partner. Think about the stakes and what we're saying here. God is approaching us, little guys here, and saying, hey, I need a partner to make my presence in the world fun. It's a big deal. You want to know how you pump yourself up? You pump yourself up by saying, I did this. By the way, this is literally the difference between a man and a woman as a whole. Right? Men tend to have a need. The reason why tefillah is a feminine aspect of the Torah, right? I need tefillah as that I am, is because men clearly have a much bigger need to say, I did this. Women are much more willing to say, let's do this. let's make this happen, right? They have the patience with a child to bear fruits, to create. So that's what we're looking at. This is what we set up. God gives us this opportunity. He says, look, every year I'm going to give you an opportunity to reset. It's literally a reset. And the reset is to look inside myself and say, get rid of that chametz, that little line that blocks that flow that we're having here. And understand that there's two types of shira. There's a relationship with God when we are an emotional relationship with God, how on our terms. So if we're filling up, we'll praise God. If we're filling down, okay, whatever. Right? Or if we're down, that's when we double down on how I'll take care of this. I'll make sure I'll figure this out. Versus say, maybe a shira saying, wait a second. There's a constant God who we could tap into and attach to. And so the baseline, that one note, is God. How we approach it and how we play it is on us.
But in times of crisis, don't we call out for God and make bargains and ask for help? It's not just at the good times, it's at the worst times also.
So yeah, 100%. And what I'm suggesting today is that there are two parallel realities of relationship with God that we could choose. And they're both not wrong, but there's more powerful. It's the leaf guy versus the guy that gets inspired by miracles. There are people that do approach suffering, even kill. It doesn't mean, see, I think the mistake we make is that we don't put as much effort into our relationship with God when we're doing well than when we're doing when things are doing bad. If we did that, in natural, I asked this question to someone yesterday about the argument was, if it's possible to really connect to God only through good. Like, can we always connect to God by just seeing the positive and good of everything? Or do we need suffering to give us a good kick in the teeth to remind us of God? And my answer is that we really could do it through only good. It's much harder work. It's much more work to do it when things are going well. Think about relationships. You have wonderful old relationships of friends. You have mentors. You have whatever it is. And we appreciate the relationship much more when the person says something negative to you versus the amount of time they give to you. Right? Why is that true? It's because that's us. We're human. It's, and we tend to be lazy about it. And we actually sometimes work very hard, not smart, in trying to feel a certain way, to create a relationship in a way of like, we spend so much more effort about why we shouldn't have a relationship with someone than versus just letting the relationship happen and see what happens. There's much more. It's a lot more work. It's a lot. A good marriage is a lot of work. And yet we still, I mean, I always say this, and it's true. It doesn't make any sense that any possible person would ever say anything negative to someone that has done so much for them. Yet our kids do it. Our spouses do it. And we do it. You know what we do it with? God. Right? Like, imagine, there's no, it's like, you know, people are like, it's so easy because it's easier. It's easier to find God when things are going bad because that I need him versus appreciating the relationship of two. I think that's true in every relationship. I mean, every single relationship we have, we tend to go, the good relationships, successful relationships are the ones that appreciate the good in that person and are willing to work through what they handle. One of the very positive things about the Kolo, we thank God the success of the Kolo, is we take a lot of different types of personalities. Even personalities that we do not naturally get along with, and we allow them to grow in their way. And sometimes it's very frustrating and very annoying. But when you allow that to grow, you actually realize, wait a second, they actually have a different take. And they actually have some talent that you don't have. and you grow that. Most of our friends are picked by choice based on what we want, how we want to see it, and how it makes us feel comfortable. Versus, oh, this is an interesting person. Let me build a relationship. Now, I'm very lucky in this. I happen to be lucky in the fact that my parents altogether were very family people. And they're very, like, there's a key in the mailbox. People came in all the time and everything. So naturally, I'm curious about people. So that's my plus. Right? I get that. I got that one. You know, thank God. But, so that's maybe why I'm passionate about this. But I've seen many other people grow into such big roles by just allowing other people in life. Allowing, you know, I just spent the conversation with one of the Kollel rabbis last night. It was a good hour and a half conversation about something. And it was rough. It was a rough conversation. We're very close, like very, very close. It was a rough conversation. I was calling them out about something they did wrong. And it was a big boo-boo. It wasn't a little boo-boo. It was a big boo-boo. And the reason why that conversation went well is because we literally, and we just did this Haftorah this past Shabbos, because of, we really have a true love and understanding of each other. So he knew the way I'm talking is way more than he needed to. Like, I that's the way I am. I'm like, you were wrong. And I even said it in my words. I said that. I'm like, I said, right now I'm flustered because it like got dropped into my lap in a real way. And I was like, I said, I'm talking stronger than I need to talk to you about it, but I'm comfortable knowing that you'll be fine with that. By the way, there's another person involved that I did not call. I'll call him today because he wouldn't be comfortable in that thing, in the way I was talking last night. But I was able to, we had the conversation. Why? Because we built so many of positive relationships. So that's my take on that, on this is that yes, it's absolutely true that there's ups and downs. I don't know if I have to say this, but I should say this. You know, I present a very wonderful Baruch Hashem, a beautiful family and everything. My father passed away 6 years ago. It was a bit, we'll get into it at some point. So it's not like I've never seen anything that's rough. It's not, I'm not claiming to be like Elvis. I'm not claiming to be Eov, you know, Job. But, you know, Chas v'Shalom. But like, there's pictures. And it's not always wonderful. This conversation was not a wonderful conversation. But it was wonderful that we could have the conversation. And we both could grow from it and change it and make mistakes and create and fix the mistake. Right? But we have to be open to that. And what I'm trying to present is a case is that the relationships in our lives that we open up and make space for is the direct analogy workout towards our relationship with God. When we learn how to make space for our neighbors, when we learn how to make space for our siblings, for our parents, for our classmates, our community members, our spouses, and we really work on that and we tap into this line of like, right, where we understand that when we make more space, these ups and downs become more stable. It doesn't mean you don't suffer. I'm very clear. It doesn't mean you're never alone. It doesn't mean Yiddishkeit, you know, that bad things don't happen. In the last month, we lost some great people in the Jewish community. It's a, right? People that did tremendous everything. And you could ask great questions on it. There was a funeral for this Rabbi Wallerstein. Rabbi Wallerstein was a person who literally took on any girl who was having an issue with Judaism. And he did it in an unbelievable way. And there was no one before him doing that. There was a lot of them. I have a niece that was personally affected positively from this person. They came to him. He knew how to deal with them. He knew how to make space for them without judgment, without anything. Without getting them back, we're talking about people with trauma. We're talking about people that have real complaints against God. It's okay. Judaism is very comfortable with people having complaints against God. They really are. We don't shush you down. But the reason why we're comfortable with that is because we understand that there's a constant. And it not that it'll work out perfectly in this world, but there's a parallel universe that we're talking about. The stakes are so much higher. So again, that we don't get rid of our physical reality of emotions, but we're given an opportunity now to peek into another level of connection. And it's not done by pushing down hurt. It's a chas v'sham. That's a terrible thing to do. And it's not done by being completely inspired by a beautiful sunset and everything. Those are important. But it's really done by making that space in life that I have a constant. And that's God. And that line is that Shiva of the Oz Yashir. It's, by the way, Oz Yashir, Oz is they will see. No, they sing at the Yabsav. That's true. Because this is the line. I'm going to use a line, and if you want, I can send it to you. Just a powerful, powerful line. This is from Rav Kook. I have to thank Adam Levenfeld for this. He put on his WhatsApp status. See? Be fully present in everything you do, for the entirety of existence is folded into the moment in front of you. That's what we're talking about here. If you can connect to God, that means you have the past, present, and future, and worlds that you never could imagine at your fingertips. He just wants you to bring them into you. We've all experienced this. I'll try to explain. We've all experienced these times where we just felt, we worked on ourselves, and we accomplished something, and we felt like a little bit, like we went somewhere. And you could ask the person, how did you get from A to B? I could tell you how this building was built. I mean, like not actual construction, but I could tell you how it was funded. I was involved in the whole thing. But can I really tell you? But David Gottlieb says, it's a great thing. He said, you take out a pencil and you write a letter. How many people were involved in you making it capable that you could write that pencil, write that letter? Think about if you have to do it yourself. Go get a pencil. Create a pencil. Go get a paper. Yeah, create a paper. Those are people who are doing it for money, Stan. What about the person who it's terrible to be at this stage in your life because then you have to admit to your parents, but raising kids, on a constant thing, staying up all night because your son decides that it's a good idea to drive cross country, right? Or decides that he's going to Santa Fe. So he's fine. And thank God he told me a story afterwards, but him and his friend went to, on the side of the road. They met a person in some house and paid him $12 to take a shower. There was no hot water. He got boiled up water and he used a big cup to pour. And I'm like, I don't want to hear this. This is crazy. Right? So my grandfather used to say, the line was, he used to say is that God has angels to protect your kids. He used to say, God has angels to protect kids sometimes from the parents too. Because you want to kill them. Like, what? Are you crazy? Are you crazy? Right? And but when you go the other way, which is like, how you could make yourself crazy and want to control everything of the kids. And Chas v'Shalom could be walking down the street and something could happen. Like, what do we control anyways? Be comfortable. Now, I will say this to people, you have to know who you are, right? This building is quite secure, and we're working on doing security. As I mentioned before, I grew up in a house where the key was in the mailbox. And literally people would just walk into the house. So I am the worst person to speak to about security. I'm just not that person. I don't lock my doors. I'm just not that way. My wife, my daughters literally go around the house and lock the doors at night. It's not because I'm against it. It's just, that's just who I am. Like, I'm that son who would go into a guy's house and take a shower. So like, I can't really complain about him. My wife has told me to stop telling any stories of my youth. Yes, she's forbidden me from telling any stories to my kids anymore because, and I feel bad for my father now because I know that my father probably was, I was in Europe by myself, just doing things, and I never even thought about that they're so worried about me. I know for sure he was, because I know now that he was. Right? By the way, God's worried about us. He's, you know, but we don't think about that ever. So our goal here is to really open up ourselves up. And the only way we open ourselves up, and this, I'm finishing up in a minute, right, is to create space for others. And when we create space for others, we all of a sudden get the tools to create space for more. And that more is God. And then our life cycles are not as violent. They will be up and down. But we could say hallow at when there's good things, we could say hallow is bad things. And that's the blessing of the Pesach Seder. The blessing of the Pesach Seder is that we sit around and we say, we're going to do the same thing. That matzah, that dalak kosos, the wine, and everything. And it's going to be chaos sometimes. And so that's going to be really nice. We could force it, or we could allow it to happen. And that piece of energy, which with the double shot of espresso of what's called true Shira, which is the Shira of the Yam, the Shira of God is present in our life constantly. And he has a plan. And he knows what he's doing. And everything does not take away the stink. But it just gives us the ability to have the stability and the constant song of life. The constant. We all love the people that are like that. We go to the people. We're drawn to the person in the tzaras. But as we're going to see, we see in Tisha B'Av, if you don't have joy in life, right, if you don't, can't suffer, you also can have joy. You have to have both. That's just the nature of it. And the proof in the pudding is our relationships. Because if your wife doesn't ever scream at you about something that you've not done, you will not recognize to the extent, oh, wait a second, I have to be a husband. And I have to recognize. And we could get up at the appropriate times and say, oh, I like to thank my wife. I did that. I did do that, obviously. And it's appropriate. But the true appreciation, the true space that you make, the space that you make of a husband and wife, the space that you make of a friendship, the what's called the piskuli achasi v'reisi, that the opening up of a sister or a companion is exactly what God's asking us to do. Open up so that we could have that relationship. And you could talk to him and you could speak to him and you could just be. It's just be. I'm going to do a very big cliffhanger. But this is, I believe, the secret of why my family had that my sister got married and my father passed away on the same night. That's a swing. And you could have a baseline. But that's for next week. So you have to come back. Yashikach, everyone, please have some coffee, some cake, bathroom break. Yes, there's some delicious coffee downstairs. If you want me to show you the machine, I will definitely show you.